Welcome to the Old North of Tel Aviv. This quiet neighborhood is full of different architectural styles, a variety of art pieces, and an unbelievable history.
Hey, welcome back to Ir Tzion. We are Sarah and Eitan, and this initiative was created by our friends Maya and Avi, a couple who love Israel and travel around it a lot. These tours are designed to let people enjoy our local charm with ease. This episode is a joint initiative and production of Ir Tzion and the Ben-Gurion House, which we will be passing soon.
The tour will last about half an hour. Please listen to us at a normal speed because the distances are well calculated. The tour stops are also shown on the map attached to the link if you want to know our route, but honestly, you don't need it. Just follow your ears. We'll start the tour on Ben-Gurion Boulevard at the corner of Dizengoff Street.
Stand next to the fruit shack and look to the other side of the intersection towards the small old building of the electricity company with a colorful mural. Can you spot it?
In the painting, you can see a child about to run towards the intersection, straight in our direction.
Rami Meiri, the artist who created this painting, was one of the first street artists in Tel Aviv. What characterizes many of his wall paintings is that they blur the boundaries between reality and fantasy.
Look at how he does it in this painting, at how the one-dimensional wall becomes two-dimensional, and from the old enclosed door, the artist brings the building to life.
Turn our backs towards the painting and the intersection, and walk down towards Ben-Gurion Boulevard, towards the sea.
While we're walking, be sure to walk on the path for pedestrians, not cyclists. We'll share a bit more about the beautiful and vibrant area we're in, the Old North of Tel Aviv.
For the wonderful layout of the main boulevards and the green neighborhood, we owe our thanks to Patrick Geddes, the Scottish architect. Geddes devised the first master plan for the city of Tel Aviv in the 1930s.
Geddes's plan created an urban fabric interwoven with these streets and boulevards, complemented by public gardens.
A work of genius, and a lot of thought was put into the detailed planning of the houses, too.
For example, before we cross the intersection, look to our left, across the junction at the Kipper House, the white building at the corner of Emil Zola Street 17 and Ben-Gurion Boulevard 32.
The beautiful curved balconies protruding from the front of the building and the elongated rectangular windows of the staircase of the main entrance are classic examples of the international style from the school of Bauhaus, prevalent during the Mandate period.
Let's cross the intersection carefully. Walk on the pedestrian path and look out for bicycles and scooters around us as you cross.
The international architectural style in Israel began in the 1920s with the arrival of many European architects who imported the style to the Middle East.
The international style evolved from the Bauhaus School of Design and Architecture, which translates as building house in German. The style is clean, devoid of ornamentation, simple and functional.
The sophisticated planning of the new neighborhoods, including pedestrian pathways between streets, hidden gardens, public structures, shading solutions, and wide boulevards, are what make Tel Aviv an amazing city for pedestrians.
And this attention to detail in Geddes' plan was one of the reasons that led to the decision to designate the White City, the historical architectural center of Tel Aviv, as a UNESCO World Heritage Site.
The White City is a nickname for an area in Tel Aviv where thousands of buildings are associated with the international architectural style, the Bauhaus, like the Kipper House that we just saw. Tel Aviv earned this nickname and title because it has the world's largest concentration of buildings in this style.
The plan that Geddes developed created unique and green urban neighborhoods, just like this one.
When you reach the intersection with Ben Yehuda Street, cross carefully when the light turns green and look to the prominent building on our right.
Whether you're waiting for the green light or already crossing the intersection, you'll notice to your right at the corner of Ben Yehuda and Ben-Gurion Boulevard, the legendary Yarden Hotel, built in an L shape. This showcases the integration of Bauhaus architecture with the warm Israeli climate. The building includes large balconies and internal windows that bring in a lot of light on one hand, but on the other, the apartments don't get too warm due to the windows being shielded from direct sunlight.
The Yarden Hotel reflects the peak period of the Bauhaus style in Tel Aviv. After you cross Ben Yehuda Street carefully, continue down Ben Gurion Boulevard towards the sea.
So, a lot of thought was put into the architectural planning of the streets, and it doesn't end here. Look at the variety of trees around you. On the boulevard, you can find jacarandas, and next to them, mulberry and ficus trees. These types of trees provide a lot of shade and cool down the temperature by 3 to 4 degrees.
And those 3 degrees are absolutely essential in the heat of the Tel Aviv summer.
Absolutely, even in the Tel Aviv winter.
Let's look at the beautiful house to our right, number 17 Ben-Gurion Boulevard. This is Ben-Gurion's house. You're invited to sit on one of the benches on the boulevard in front of the house.
David Ben-Gurion, the first prime minister of the State of Israel, and his wife, Paula, decided to build their private home on this plot, which they acquired in 1931.
After he passed away in 1973, it was decided to commemorate him here on this street.
Wait a sec, didn't Ben-Gurion live in Sde Boker in the southern desert?
When I started working here, and I live in Givatayim next to Tel Aviv, all my friends said, "Are you crazy? How are you going to travel to Sde Boker every day?"
This is Nelly Markman, CEO of Ben-Gurion House in Tel Aviv.
I don't travel to Sde Boker every day. Why don't I do it? Because Ben-Gurion has a house in Tel Aviv. By the way, this was his first house, long before he thought about Sde Boker. He understood that he needed to live in Tel Aviv because Tel Aviv is a city, and that everything happened in Tel Aviv. If you need to operate things, make decisions, and meet people, you do it in Tel Aviv. More importantly than his home, he built his library here, the core of his thoughts. His library contains the ideas that move him, which eventually get translated into his actions and policy.
Ben-Gurion also wanted to take part in establishing the first workers' neighborhood. Therefore, he purchased the plot here as part of the associations of the workers who established this new neighborhood. Establishing a neighborhood in Tel Aviv was also an act of pioneering in those days.
The house, planned by the architects Aryeh Sharon and Ze'ev Rechter, looks very simple from the outside but is beautiful on the inside. At the time, it was also one of the few buildings in the neighborhood approved to have 2 floors. The family lived on the first floor, and on the second floor, you can find the unique library that Nelly mentioned.
The library includes almost 20,000 titles in over 30 languages.
Ben-Gurion could read in about 11 languages, and some of them he learned specifically to read books that interested him in their original language, to make sure he did not miss a thing.
That's what's called intellectual FOMO.
Totally. I wish I had that type of FOMO. The home is open for visitors, and we encourage you to check the opening hours and be sure to visit the house at the end of our tour.
Continue down the boulevard towards the sea. Ben-Gurion's house should be to your right.
In his will, Ben-Gurion bequeathed the house we saw to the State of Israel. And about 3 years later, the Knesset, the Israeli parliament, passed the David Ben-Gurion law, stating that the house would be open to the public and serve as a museum in his memory and to commemorate his legacy.
And so it remains to this day. Let's move towards the black and silver statue sitting on the white base at the center of the boulevard and stop next to it.
I don't know if you noticed, but Tel Aviv is full of statues and works of art. This makes Tel Aviv the bustling cultural capital that it is.
From its inception, the municipality of Tel Aviv invested a lot to attract sculptors and Jewish artists from around the world.
As a result, a whole community of artists developed in the small and historic center of Tel Aviv. Many of them are also commemorated on the plaques on the entrance to the houses.
To this day, any Israeli who wants to create and make a name for themselves in the world of arts and culture must first prove themselves in the first Hebrew city.
The black and silver statue on the white base next to us is the work of the sculptor Gidon Gertz, named the Gordian Knot, a reference in Greek mythology to a complex knot that is difficult to untie.
Gordian knot is also a fitting metaphor for the connection of the Jewish people with the land of Israel. This relationship is expressed in the name of the first Hebrew city, Tel Aviv. Tel, an archaeological mound, and Aviv, spring, bloom, and renewal.
The sculpture was donated by the art collector Ayelet Zaks Abramov, who lived in the adjacent house on Ben Gurion Boulevard number 13, the one painted in apricot orange. Her beautiful house was designed by the architect Dov Karmi in the modern style.
Zaks contributed greatly to the development of art in Israel, and she bequeathed her house here to the Open University.
Let's continue down Ben Gurion Boulevard and climb the pedestrian path towards Atarim Square. והיא תנחש לו, מה היא תנחש לו, קח אותי על הגמל. I'm your beauty, you're my beast, welcome to the Middle East. תל אביב, יא חביבי, תל אביב, תסתכל כמה לירדים מסביב. עושים לי היי היי, בלילה וואי וואי. Sachten al Tel Aviv, Tel Aviv, ya habibi Tel Aviv. Tistakel kamalir di misaviv. Keep walking towards Atarim Square and continue straight and left with a path towards the stairs that lead down to the sea.
So, we've seen some Bauhaus architecture at the Kipper House, modern architecture at the Ayelet Zaks House, and now an architectural style that's a bit less successful in this space. Brutalism.
As we ascend, take a look at the square and at the building that encircles it to the right. This is a good example of brutalist architecture.
Brutalism is characterized by exposed concrete constructions and the use of basic and diverse shapes. The raw and bare concrete, along with the windows designed to bring in plenty of natural light to the interior space, aim to reflect how an urban structure really looks without filters and cosmetics. Let's continue moving towards the sea.
In practical terms, brutalism did not work out in this spot. It led to the square not being able to sustain businesses and commerce, and did not create a pleasant pedestrian route between the city and the sea, which has made it abandoned and neglected over the years.
But it's worth mentioning that there are places in the world where brutalism has succeeded and works well. It really depends on the space. Let's continue moving straight and towards the left corner where the stairs lead us to the sea.
The original planning here, by architects Yaakov Rechter and Werner Yosef Witkover, was quite creative. They set the road into an underground tunnel and created a main square for pedestrians where we stand now. They took advantage of the natural descent of the Kolkar Hill to create parking levels. Let's move towards the stairs in the left corner close to the sea.
The square initially succeeded, but quickly began to deteriorate both aesthetically and in terms of the businesses that opened there. Over the years, there have been renewed attempts to revive the square, like the opening of the Colosseum Club in the round building, but it did not manage to take off.
Even during the Gulf War in 1991, the then mayor, Shlomo Lahat, expressed that he would prefer for a Scud missile to hit the square once and for all, which is a bit harsh. When you reach the edge of the square, start walking down the stairs towards the sea.
And if the former mayor's expression wasn't enough, in 2012, the Pussycat Strip Club was opened in the round building and operated until it was closed by court order a few years ago. Keep walking down the stairs to the promenade.
Since the closure of the Pussycat Strip Club that was here, the round building has been operated by an NGO called The Social Space, hosting thousands of people and promoting the struggle for gender equality and social responsibility.
The Social Space is an association that receives real estate donations from developers for temporary use for several years, mainly in Jerusalem and Tel Aviv, turning them into homes for social initiatives and spaces that welcome everyone.
Truly a genius initiative. While you take in the beautiful sea view in front of us, Eitan, can you tell us what the future holds for the struggling Atarim Square?
Since 2017, there has been an ongoing movement by residents around the complex to ensure that this square won't be overdeveloped due to its proximity to the sea. Let's keep following as it plays out.
Continue going down the stairs towards the promenade and the beach, and at the end turn right and then right again.
Have you reached the promenade? At the bottom of the stairs, turn right and right again, walking north on the promenade with the sea to your left. Cross the bike path carefully.
As we walk on the promenade, we pass over Gordon Beach, the northernmost bathing beach in central Tel Aviv, where Ben Gurion used to practice Feldenkrais and do headstands every morning.
In addition to his famous headstands, he used to do a lot of walking. He walked about 7 kilometers daily on a similar route to the one we are walking now.
Headstands and long daily walks on the promenade. It makes me think, when did he have time to govern the country?
Excellent question. During his walks, high-ranking officials, politicians, and anyone who received an invitation would join him.
He was indeed an active old man. Ahead of us, on the left side, you can see the Gordon Pool, a Tel Avivian icon. The pool was opened in the 1950s and has had a steady clientele ever since. Let's keep moving along the promenade.
The water in the Gordon Pool is deep seawater rich in minerals at a constant temperature of about 24 degrees Celsius, drawn from a depth of about 150 meters and replaced daily.
Here, in the area of Atarim Square and the Gordon Pool, there used to be a poor neighborhood called Makhloul, named after the Ottoman legal term for land unsuitable for agriculture. Keep walking down the promenade.
This area used to look like a refugee camp in the first days of the young state. Here, ships docked and unloaded illegal Jewish immigrants, or Ma'apilim, who escaped Europe and tried to evade the British Mandate patrol who awaited them on the shore.
And today, this is a docking station for private blue and white Israeli yachts.
Keep walking down the promenade as the sea is to your left. אני נושם אוויר צעת המצח לי נוטף רואה אותך נהיה לי חם כל כך אדם לאדם כאן אין אחד שלא שייך אז את תהיה עצוב אך שלי תשמח וואי 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 שמזורחת מאליי ליי ליי כמו דק במים אני חי 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 לפי הכסף של המטות אני זד ולא חושב יותר מדי וואי 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 שמזורחת מאליי ליי ליי כמו דק במים אני חי 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 לפי הכסף של המטות אני זד ולא חושב יותר מדי וואי ואליי ליי ליי כן אני חי 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 ולא חושב יותר מדי וואי ואליי ליי ליי כן אני חי 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 ולא חושב יותר מדי
It's still a bit far from us, but as we continue walking down the promenade with the sea to our left, look towards the corner of the promenade and the nearby exit to the road on our right, near the Carlton Hotel.
At the corner of the promenade in front of us, just below the hill, do you see a tall green bronze sculpture?
This sculpture, created by Drora Domini, commemorates the place of the political assassination that shook the young Jewish settlement in 1933. The assassination of Chaim Arlozorov. Let's move toward the sculpture and stop by it while we tell you about the political assassination.
Chaim Arlozorov went to Berlin in 1933 on behalf of the Jewish Agency to conduct negotiations regarding Jewish property in Germany. This led to an agreement to funnel goods signed between the Nazi authorities and the Jewish Agency.
Criticism arose over the agreement, especially from the right-wing leaders, and Arlozorov received death threats.
After returning from Berlin, Arlozorov and his wife went for a walk on the promenade one Saturday evening. And at the place we are now, two men ambushed the couple.
Today, the Tel Aviv promenade is bustling at all hours. But in the 1930s, this area was quite deserted in the late evenings.
After a short conversation between the two pairs, the two men shot Chaim Arlozorov. He was rushed to the hospital but passed away a few hours later.
The sculpture next to us is composed of 9 sand dune-like bronze pieces, arranged one above the other. At the top, the city emerges from the sand, overlooking the sea, the city of Tel Aviv. Can you identify the small buildings up there?
And next to the sculpture, on its right side, stands a pratoma, a relief image of Chaim Arlozorov, sculpted by Moshe Ziffer.
The mystery of Arlozorov's assassination, which remains unsolved to this day, continues to stir the Israeli public for many years after the event. Labor movement leaders continue to accuse right-wing revisionists of political murder, while revisionist camp members blame the labor movement for a blood libel.
Now it's time to leave the promenade. Turn your back to the sea, the statue now to your left, and climb the stairs up towards the park on the hill.
The mystery still constitutes an open political wound, even though all the people involved in the story are no longer alive.
Keep walking up until you reach the road. Across the road, we can see the unique building called the Crazy House. As we look at the house, let's climb the small ramp to our left that leads to the garden on the hill. We'll stand in a comfortable spot on the path looking towards the Crazy House.
The building, designed by the architect Leon Genebe in the late 90s, is inspired by the French architect Hector Guimard, who is known for his designs of the Paris Metro.
The building has 2 distinctive facades, one facing us now and the other facing eastward. The architect tried to create a facade that depicts the borderline between the city and the sea.
Genebe used different materials to express the meeting between the city and the sea. On the urban side that we are looking at now, he integrated metal, concrete, and carved wood, while on the other side facing Hayalkon Street, he incorporated natural materials that represent the sea, such as local Kulkal stones, shells, and sand.
Initially, the plan was to rent the uniquely designed building to artists, providing each apartment with a studio. However, it eventually turned into luxury apartments. You can see a model of this building in mini Israel.
Turn your back to the Crazy House and let's walk into the Independence Park.
The Independence Park, located at the top of the Kurkar Hill, which we are ascending now, is undoubtedly a magical gem in Tel Aviv.
We'll turn right with a path.
In the southern part of the park, right where we are standing now, they discovered remnants of a fortress from the Hasmonean period, built along the coast during the 1st century BCE. The Hasmoneans were a Jewish dynasty in Israel, and their legacy is celebrated during the festival of Hanukkah.
Turn left and continue climbing with a path.
In front of us, to the left, at the top of the Kurkar Hill and beyond the bushes, you can see a fenced-off area. Inside the compound is the grave of a Muslim saint named Abd al-Nabi. The Muslim community established a graveyard next to his grave, and people from the Sumail village and Jaffa were buried here in the second half of the 19th century, especially after the cholera epidemic in 1903. That year, the Jewish Yeshuv also established the Trumpeldor Cemetery not far from us.
We'll continue straight with a path and pass by the Muslim cemetery on the hill to our left. This beautiful garden was planned by the landscape architect Avraham Karavan, the father of the architect Danny Karavan, who invested a lot of thought into it.
Karavan integrated low coastal shrubs resistant to winds and salt that suit the seashore.
Many of the trees, as you can see around us, have taken on coastal characteristics as they grow at an angle pointing east due to the natural sea breeze.
The garden underwent renovation about a decade ago by landscape architect Tzvi Decker, and it stands out as an urban gem.
Gabi
turn left with the path.
In the 1940s, the British established a small military base for pilots right here where the Hilton Hotel stands today. The British camp turned into Camp Yonah, named after a Haganah defense commander, Yonah Razin, who was killed on the way to Jerusalem during the War of Independence.
Turn right and advance with the path towards the Hilton Hotel that you can see in front of us.
Camp Yonah, located here, was the site of a story that stirred the Jewish population during the early days of the state. As the Altalena ship carrying arms and fighters was bombed and exploded here in June of 1948.
The Altalena ship belonged to the Irgun led by Menachem Begin.
The Irgun refused to hand over the weapons on the ship to the IDF despite the government's decision to disband the underground organizations. Ben-Gurion ordered the IDF to shell the ship to prevent it from reaching the shore. From Camp Yonah, where we are standing now, a cannon of the IDF fired at the ship, and it was later dubbed by Ben-Gurion as the Holy Cannon.
In the battles that ensued, 16 Irgun fighters and 3 IDF soldiers were killed, until Menachem Begin directed the Irgun soldiers to stop fighting back in order to prevent a civil war. Continue walking past the hill towards the Hilton Hotel until you find a small path to your left leading to an amphitheater overlooking the Mediterranean Sea.
Please find a seat on one of the benches overlooking the sea or find a shaded spot nearby.
The Zionist movement understood very early, and also the Jewish settlement in the land, that the settlements here won't survive if various independent security forces emerge.
This is Professor Nir Kedar, president of Sapir Academic College, who has written extensively about Ben-Gurion's leadership.
Regarding Altalena, not only did they act against the government's decision, but it should also be remembered that dozens, if not hundreds, of Irgun fighters deserted and arrived at the shore by a Nai beach. Back then, they called it Kfar Witkin beach. A battle ensued, and 3 IDF soldiers were killed. Irgun fighters, Jews from the Irgun, shot at IDF soldiers and killed them. This is the background that we must remember when we think of Ben-Gurion's order to bomb the Altalena. An order filled with sorrow, which, in my opinion, had terrible and ominous consequences that could have been avoided.
The Altalena affair continues to ignite heated public and political controversy to this day, and is discussed extensively in public discourse.
Now, let's take a look at the beautiful view in front of us. To our left, down below, we can see the marina that we passed by just a short while ago.
And if you look into the horizon to your left, you can see the city of Jaffa, a city full of history and one of the oldest port cities in the land of Israel.
At the edge of Jaffa, on the hill near the sea, you can see the tower of the Church of St. Peter, which was erected over the ruins of an even older church, a reminder of the many wars that were fought over the Holy Land of Israel.
Jaffa's port was a crucial gateway to the land of Israel for hundreds of years. During the Arab revolt of the 1930s, the port was closed for an extended period and the Jewish population had to find an alternative solution.
This crisis led to the establishment of a new port, the Tel Aviv port, reflecting the first steps towards Jewish independence in the land.
Behind Jaffa, when it isn't hazy, you can see the residential towers of Bat Yam. I wonder what Ben-Gurion would think of this modern wave of developments.
I think this is an excellent historical and topographical point to conclude our tour, at the edge of this quiet green and blue neighborhood of Tel Aviv. So thank you for joining us on this journey through architecture, urban planning, art, and of course our history in the land of Israel. Many of the foundational ideas that the State of Israel were shaped right here in the nearby streets around us. We recommend continuing the tour with a visit to Ben-Gurion's house. And if you enjoyed the tour, please share it with your friends.
This episode is a collaborative initiative and production of Ir Tzion and Ben-Gurion House, who supported the production of this episode. Additionally, you have our other tours of Ir Tzion on all podcast platforms. Many thanks to Nelly Markman and Professor Nir Kedar for accompanying us during the tour. Thanks to Avi and Maya for writing and producing it. We are Eitan and Sarah, who are responsible for getting this to you in English. Feel free to write to us and follow us on Instagram, Facebook, and TikTok for information on new episodes alongside fascinating content and recommendations for sites and trips.
So what's it going to be? A coffee shop or sunset at the Hilton Hill?
Both. We're in Tel Aviv, aren't we?